Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca. Mesut Özil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo. Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español. Marca Nacho Monreal. Pim pam pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, badly afternoon to you.
Badly afternoon indeed. It feels strange that we're on the eve of a new year, 2019. Feels so futuristic, and yet yesterday's football match felt like very much something from the past returning. It felt like we'd stepped into a time machine and gone back to not that long ago, basically.
Yes, it's kind of like having a wart, and you get rid of the wart, and then the wart comes back. Like on your foot or something, you know, something that might recur.
Like, and you're like, I thought, have I ever told you about when I cut a wart off my foot?
No. Please do, because I'd rather hear this than talk about the football, to be honest.
Basically, as a child, I had some sort of, not a child, I was probably in my early teens, I had some sort of growth on the end of my toe.
Right.
So I rather than sort of, you know, just leave it or go to a doctor or something, and I didn't tell anybody, and I got a pair of like metal clippers and removed it, like cut it off, and I had to wrap my foot in a towel overnight because it was bleeding so much. But I lived to tell the tale, and it never came back.
Wow.
So kids, if you're listening,
do your own surgery. If anything's growing out of you, just chop it off. Get nearest
bolt cutters and a towel.
And you're good. Good as gold.
You'll be all fine.
James, his physical health, his wonderful condition is evident that everything will be okay. So go for it.
I'm sure people are more happy to hear about that than they are about the football, right?
I'm sure they are.
As disgusting as it is.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever cut anything off myself. I've had a few surgery things, but nothing like that.
Nothing you've done yourself?
No.
Fair enough. I'm a pioneer.
You are.
No anaesthetic either. Just straight in.
Did it hurt?
I think so, but I think I was so appalled at whatever it was. Presumably it was some sort of war that I... You know, it was a sacrifice I considered worth making.
I tell you, the one thing that did happen to me was I had a sort of a bone growth out of the side of my right knee when I was in my teenage years as well. And it sort of grew out at a right angle. And I remember sitting down. I'd been to the doctor about it and everything. And I had to get it removed surgically in the end. But I remember sitting down in class one day and I crossed my legs and I snapped it in two. That hurt. That really hurt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What shape was it when it was coming out?
Was it
like another kneecap? Or?
No, it was kind of thinner and more sticky outy. So like a little bone Mickey out of my knee.
Wow.
Yeah. And it snapped in two. I snapped my knee's banjo string in two.
Oh, my word. When they took it out, did you keep it? Do you have it as a key ring?
I don't have it at all. I don't know what they did with it. I presume they threw it away. I wasn't particularly keen on keeping it, but, you know, looking back now, it would have been a nice little keepsake.
Souvenir. Maybe the doctor who removed it is listening. And if we could reunite you with the bone Mickey from your knee, wouldn't that be a beautiful
thing? It would be an amazing
2019?
Thing. Yeah, I think, you know, it could be preserved in amber, buried deep within the earth, and some point in the future, I could be brought back to life. There could be just like a Jurassic Park of Andrews running around. This is the Andrewsaurus Rex.
Wow.
Look at the massive crap here. That's how they know they're in the... Anyway.
So many podcasts. They could have one each.
Yeah, we are skirting around the issue, I think.
We are Martin Skirtling around the issue.
Martin Skirtling around the issue. Yeah, there's a thing.
It wasn't good, was it?
No, it wasn't good at all. Now, tell me, when you went into this game and you saw the lineup, what were you realistically thinking? I have to say, I wasn't confident at all that we were going to get anything from the game. When we went ahead, it was like a nice little surprise, but it was like giving us a really fleeting moment of happiness, wasn't it? The way the game panned out, they sort of gave us a bite of this delicious thing and then took it away and replaced it with a complete shit sandwich.
Absolutely. I was watching in the pub and thinking back, I think the degree to which I celebrated the opening goal kind of betrayed my surprise and my how much I expected us to lose. I never really thought we would get anything from this game, which is partly why I had all my eggs in the Brighton basket, you know,
yeah,
get Lucas Torreira out there,
fair.
Make sure
you
we get that 3
yeah.
points.
Yeah.
Obviously, we didn't do that. That didn't work, that plan. But this game I always looked at, and I looked at Liverpool, particularly what they had going forward against our defence, and I just couldn't see us keeping them out. I guess I kind of fantasised that maybe we would hit some kind of attacking form and put two or three past them and make it tricky for them, like we did at Stamford Bridge, say, or at Old Trafford. But it wasn't like that. And the having gone ahead, though, I must say, the speed of our collapse was something to behold.
It was like the game at Old Trafford, wasn't it, where we went ahead and then, or, you know, they equalised both times really quickly after we'd scored. Were you expecting
both
it
times,
to... go on.
Sort of amusingly calamitous goals.
It's not amusing. I can't find anything amusing in the way we defend or some of the people defend. If it was happening to another team, I promise you I would be laughing my tits off. I really would. Because I look at some of the players that we have and the way that they attempt to defend, and I think, what the fuck? How are you a professional footballer?
Well, just before we get further into this, mentioned when you saw the lineup and you were perturbed at best. What did you think of the decision not to start with Laurent Koscielny?
I guess he's just not physically ready. I guess he's not able. I mean, that's the reality of his situation. He's just back from 6 or 7 months out. He's been asked to play quite a bit recently, and I think the demands are too high. So that's the only reason. I assume it's based on physical tests and everything else that they do. Because even at this point, at 33 years of age, having ruptured his Achilles tendon and spent 7 months out doing rehab and clearly not anywhere near as match fit as you would like him to be, Laurent Koscielny is still our best central defender. And that tells you everything you need to know about this Arsenal defence. I think they would have played him if they could, because why wouldn't you? And I know he had a really difficult time in whatever game that was. What was it? The Southampton game. I know he did a terrible time. You do have to put that in the context of him just coming back, etc., etc. So I was a little bit surprised that it wasn't a back three when I looked at the lineup.
Well,
and
I couldn't go on. I was watching it as well, and I assumed it was going to be a back three. And I have to say, up until we fell behind in the game, I thought there were moments where it did look like a back three, where Lichtsteiner was tucked quite narrow and Ainsley Maitland-Niles seemed to be playing outside him. But certainly from when we went behind, it was more like a four, wasn't it? With Maitland-Niles pushing really, really high. He spent the whole game pushing really high, to be honest. They were obviously looking to exploit Andy Robertson, who makes so many runs forward. And it actually worked, let's not forget, for our opening goal. He made a great run in behind him. But yeah, I've in the first half found the system confusing, because if Lichtsteiner was playing fullback, then he was playing it very, very narrow.
Yeah.
But equally, if Ainsley Maitland-Niles was playing wing back, he was playing it exceptionally high.
Well, I mean, I assume he picked that personnel if he felt like the team needed to revert to a back three, because you could do that very easily by bringing Maitland-Niles back, moving Lichtsteiner in alongside the other two Egypts. But, you know, it didn't happen. We did score. We did score first. I thought it was a really good goal. We won the ball. Well, Liverpool gave the ball away quite cheaply, but we did well with it. Ramsey and Iwobi combining, Iwobi with a great cross and Maitland-Niles there to stick it in the back of the net. And, what a game to score your first goal in. You know, it's a day he'll absolutely want to forget, because it was such a shambles of a performance. But a good goal from him. And I thought both him and Iwobi were probably the only two bright spots on the night.
Yeah, I think that is fair to say. I mean, you know, Iwobi's been a player who's been out of form recently, and Emery actually spoke about that after the game to the BBC. I think said he's not been particularly good recently, but he had a good game today. I thought he did really well for the goal and generally was better than he has been. I feel for Maitland-Niles too, because this was a big game for him to start in. You know, he made an impact with the goal, but that's just going to be really forgotten, you know, in the broader context of the match because of what followed.
Mm. And what followed was just... I'm laughing, but I'm not really laughing. I'm just laughing because it's a coping mechanism, I guess. Because the alternative is full-on rage and madness, and I'm not sure that anybody needs to hear that. Or maybe they do need to hear it, but I don't think it would be the most productive way to discuss this fucking load of shit that we saw.
Well, let's maybe go goal by goal, just, yep. You know, for the sake of being able to provide some kind of analytical thought beyond the rage. The first goal, I mean, okay, is it a bit unlucky, the first one?
Yep, it is a little bit unlucky because the ball broke to Firmino. I mean, I'm not sure Lichtsteiner kicking the ball off Mustafi's arse was the most experienced piece of defensive play I've ever seen.
No, I mean, he can't, you know, that is unfortunate the way it rebounds off his arse directly into Firmino's path. But when you do look at it, he could have put it some other places.
Yes, like not in Mustafi's arse.
Yeah, that would have been behind the goal, yeah. Away from the goal, away from Mustafi.
Away from Mustafi's arse, anywhere but Mustafi and Mustafi's arse. I mean, look, I think there was something instructive about the way that the ball started bouncing around our area. It was a Granit Xhaka tackle on Mo Salah, and it was a last-ditch tackle in our box. And from the first whistle, we were being forced into those kind of challenges and that kind of defending. We were so on the back foot. We were being pulled apart. We were stretched all over the pitch. They were finding space in behind us. And it was a consequence of how we played the game in general. The fact that we were just having to make last-ditch challenges all the time. And we did it from the first minute to the last, and not all of them worked out well. So it was a little bit unlucky, but I think someone like Lichtsteiner should have done a lot better with that ball when it broke to him in the box. Firmino taps it in. 1-1, 2-1. Please describe to me, in your own words, what you thought of this goal and what it made you feel.
I think it made me feel ashamed. I think that's the word. I mean, it was, as I say, I was watching it in a public space, so I think that sense of embarrassment was heightened. I mean, it's one of those where you're sort of grateful that the commentator talks about Firmino's brilliance and how he waltzes through the defence, because really that is barely half the story. You know, parts like the Dead Sea for him. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's absolutely, I mean, it's Keystone Cops. It's every bad defensive cliche that you've ever heard could be applied to this situation. Schoolboy stuff, you know, clown car defending. It is all of that and more. I mean, it goes back, actually. Torreira gets dispossessed, doesn't he, by Mane, gets caught on the ball. Yeah. And I have to say, I really like Lucas Torreira. I think he's been a good signing. I thought he had a really disastrous, particularly the first 30 minutes of this game.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at their first goal, the 1-1, he gets very easily turned by Firmino. I think Mane turned him very easily early on as well. It was almost like he was
knackered.
Yeah.
From playing at Brighton, perhaps?
Well, maybe. But, I mean, I have to say, I don't even think he could have prevented what happened yesterday. If you see what I mean, I still think it's almost redundant. Like, what we had at the back had no real chance, I think, given the way it turned out. Mm. But, yeah, I thought he was poor. And I thought that's partly why they seem to be constantly running at our defence and forcing us into those last-ditch tackles. That said, what happens when Firmino goes through? Look, it's decent from Firmino, but Mustafi and Socrates are, I mean, they disgrace themselves, maybe.
I think that's not far from the truth. Yeah. Like, what Mustafi does, if you did that at, here we go with a big cliche, but if you did it at Sunday League level, you wouldn't play for a month. It was that bad. It was absolutely ridiculous. And you can say what you want to me about, oh, he's been out for a couple of weeks with a hamstring injury. That's got nothing to do with that. That's got nothing to do with the way he tried to defend there. I don't know that you can actually call that defending, waggling out a leg. Do you remember Danielson towards the end of his Arsenal career would sort of go through the motions of making a tackle? He'd just sort of hang a leg out at a player as he sped past him, followed swiftly by the referee, who was faster than Danielson. To me, that's the final fucking straw with Mustafi. I've just had it up to my eyes with that guy. You know, he is capable, I accept, of good performances, and on his day, he can look like a good centre-half. But the days are few and far between. The mistakes are far too regular, far too often, and that's not just bad defending. It's lazy, it's careless, it's stupid. It's a player who doesn't really give a fuck, you know, to attempt to defend that way. And I don't know if it's some kind of zombie central defensive apocalypse that's going on, that he infected Socrates with the same thing, because he wasn't much better. But, you know, we've got a track record of Mustafi ending up on his arse for no good reason. And that was just absolutely embarrassing from him. And you're absolutely right where the commentator goes, that's brilliant from Firmino. Well, it was all right from Firmino, but it was just shambolic defending. It really was. It was like one of those games where you ever see one of those games where they play three professional players against 90 children and they run around on the pitch and the children all sort of wiggle out their little tiny legs to try and get the ball and the professional players can just, you know, keep it on a pitch. It's like that. Mustafi is 90 small children. That's how good he is at football. He's worse than the 90 small children. I just can't. I felt so angry after that goal went in. So angry that this is nominally our first choice central defensive partnership. And you're looking at them going, who the fuck is coaching you? Who the fuck is teaching you? Who is telling you what to do on the pitch? And why don't you know how to do the basics anyway? How is it you get caught doing that same shit time and time again? And how has nobody fucking punched you in the eye on the training ground? Or I just, not that I'm advocating violence, I'm just trying to express the emotion that it caused in me when I saw that yesterday. It was just, get the fuck out of here and don't come back. Like if I drive off, I tell Mustafi, go back in, I left something in my kit bag, and I'd drive the coach off and I'd fucking leave him there.
We don't yet know if that happened, but we can only...
Sorry about that. I told you that it's the switcheroo here between the laughing as a coping mechanism and thinking about it again and getting fucking angry.
No, I mean, in some respects, I've been looking forward to doing this podcast because there's a kind of cathartic element to it. But in other respects, I kind of fear opening the Pandora's box. I mean, did we ever hear, by the way, why Mustafi went off at halftime? Was there ever an injury cited there? Or?
No, maybe because he was just back from his hamstring injury. Maybe he was feeling his hamstring injury. Maybe, just maybe, the manager, having seen him do what he did for that goal, decided, get the fuck off the pitch. That's not good enough. And you're not going back out there. So we'll play Koscielny, who wasn't fit enough to play 90 minutes and could probably do 45. To me, I hope that's what it was.
I wouldn't put it past the manager to make that kind of call. We've seen some things like that from him all season long, so that feels entirely plausible. I mean, it really was diabolical stuff, and compounded, I suppose, by Torreira, who almost got back falling over. There were three Arsenal defensive players, you know, on the floor by the time Firmino actually put it in the net. Mm. And I mean, how quickly did those two goals come? It was within minutes of each other, wasn't it?
Yeah, about 90 seconds between the two goals. And, you know, from going ahead against the run of play, you're now behind, and the momentum of the game just completely shifted. And it's not an exaggeration to say that every time they came forward, I was afraid that we would concede. Because I look at the players that we had back there and... anything is possible. And it's just, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. You know, you look at the amount of goals we've conceded. It's 30 goals in 20 Premier League games. It's really, really bad defensively. I thought the third goal was really bad as well. We conceded a corner we didn't need to concede. A careless back pass from Kolasinac to Leno. Yeah. He couldn't keep it in. We clear the corner. We attempt to play some kind of offside trap, but it's like a wiggly line. It's like the wiggly line.
It's on a diagonal.
It's sort of like, you know, when you get a heart monitor on. It was like the wiggly beat of your heart. Yeah. And that was, you know, probably the equivalent of everyone's heartbeat watching that.
It looked like a weather front. Which I don't think they're supposed to.
No, they're definitely not. It's called, you know, the line. Keep the, it's a line. Lines are straight. Straight.
Yeah.
Not all wiggly-waggly. Lichtsteiner played Salah on. Mustafi had no fucking idea what was going on. Neither
they
did Socrates.
Outnumbered us, I think, 4-2 on that back post, didn't they? Or something crazy like that. Oh. And then Salah puts it across, and nobody's anticipated that. And, you know, Chase, who is it who puts it in?
Mane. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. You know, what could the defenders be thinking there? That's probably all right. Keeper will come and get it. There's no chance a Liverpool player could be in here to, you know, knock the ball home from 7 or 8 yards. Why would that happen? Mm. Just leave it. It'll be fine.
And they were so tenacious in that first half. You know, it just felt like they, well, I suppose they sensed our vulnerability. And, you know, you can imagine Klopp's team talk, go out and blitz them in the first half. This game could be won by half time. Mm. And it absolutely was.
Fourth goal, a penalty.
For me, I think that was maybe one of the most irritating moments of the game for me. I mean, I've seen that described as a dive, but I mean, it's, to me, it's an absolute stick-on penalty. I can't believe there's any debate about that.
Me either. I mean, Salah gets goal side of Socrates, and Socrates kicks at his ankles, not once, not twice, but three times.
Yeah.
What's he supposed to do? Like, if an Arsenal player's in that position and he doesn't go down, he's an idiot, an absolute idiot. You know?
That's it. I mean, it's not like it's one point of contact where it's debatable. It's like he kicks him once, he doesn't get the ball, he kicks him again through the back of him. I mean, it's... Mm. I can only imagine that his head had gone at that point. And it's funny, you said on this show, I think a couple of weeks ago, at some point his physicality will, you know, rear its ugly head and cost us a little bit. Mm. I mean, to be honest, the game was probably gone at this point anyway. But
it's 100% penalty. I don't know why there's any debate about this at all.
Yes.
And I don't really understand why there's any, why people are being so critical of the referee in this game. You know, I know we could have had a penalty at 5-1 after they got a second penalty. How did you view that second one?
The second one, the Kolasinac one,
mm.
I think that is pretty soft, actually. I was surprised it was given.
Mm.
What do you think? Do you think penalty?
I think he gave the referee a decision to make when he didn't need to give him a decision to make. I'm just going to look back on it here. I'm just going to look at the replay.
He is very clumsy at times in the
well,
box.
Remember the game a couple of weeks ago? What game was it?
I forget. He flattened somebody, didn't he?
It could have been the Southampton game.
Yeah, maybe it was.
I'm just going to look at it here again. Here we go. There's the referee saying to Leno. Yeah, it's kind of like Lovren makes the most of it, but he's right in front of the referee.
He does put his hands to the back, doesn't he?
It is a bit soft. I can sort of see why the referee gave it. And he skirts that line anyway with the way that he plays Kolasinac in the box. He's always holding people, always pushing people, got his arms around people. He's physical in that regard, and he gets away with it most of the time, and last night he didn't. I don't think it made any real difference. As for the 5-1, the penalty that we should have had, it was a slow motion replay which showed that there was some connection with Klein and Lacazette. And Lacazette tried to carry on, and then he went down a couple of steps later, didn't he? And I think the referee, that put some doubt in the referee's mind. But let's remember, for all the people being critical of the referee, he could easily have sent Granit Xhaka off.
Yeah.
Easily.
Very easily.
He would have been well within his rights to send him off. And he let him away with that because Xhaka had just been booked for a foul because he was furious at Mustafi. So I think we can forgive him the foul. But the kicking the ball away after he'd been booked, I mean, that's fucking stupid. It's really, really stupid. And I know you can get wound up and do silly things in a game, but when you've just gotten a yellow card, get back in position, shut the fuck up, and don't do anything that might get you another yellow card. So Michael Oliver let us off the hook there, because he could easily have sent Xhaka off.
I actually didn't see the Lacazette penalty incident at 5-1 because I had left the pub at 5-1.
Right.
I had to go and watch Danny Dyer and his daughter, Danny Dyer Jr., in Nativity the Musical.
What the
and
fuck?
Let me tell you, I was happy, having not wanted to do that for some time in the build-up, when the time came for me to leave the pub and stop watching the game and go and watch Danny Dyer sing and dance on stage in front of me, I was genuinely happier to do that than continue watching the Arsenal game.
Fuck
and
me.
If that doesn't tell its own story, I don't know what will.
Danny Dyer, and what part was he playing?
He was playing a Hollywood agent, and he did it...
Oh, in the Nativity?
In the Nativity musical, yeah, yeah. He played a Hollywood agent with a Cockney accent. It was very surreal. But the tickets were bought for me by somebody else. However, I was genuinely like, look, I was really upset all week. I'm going to miss the last part of this game to watch Danny Dyer. And by the time came, I was like, bring me Danny Dyer.
Oh my God.
I would rather... And that, I mean, that's, I think, the lowest I've ever been as
yes,
an Arsenal fan.
That's pretty far down the ladder of shitness, isn't it?
That last 15 minutes, you can fill me in. Did we offer anything?
I can't remember. I don't think we did, no. I mean, there was the penalty incident. It probably should have been a penalty. But, you know, I could see why the referee didn't give it, because he didn't have a slow motion replay. That was in the 84th minute. And
unlikely then to spark the comeback.
Exactly. It could completely moot at that point whether we got a penalty or not. That was that. I mean, they had more chances to score. Leno made a save, a couple of saves.
So what's your reaction coming out of the game? I mean, it's a very quite a humbling defeat, and I think one that shows quite how far we are off the top. But do you think, I don't know, what's your sort of immediate response to it?
My immediate response is that it's quite damaging. You know, I think we could have all lived, not lived with a defeat, you know what I mean? But if we'd lost 1-0 or 2-1 or 2-0 exactly, or something like that. But this was embarrassing, really, because we didn't do ourselves any kind of justice. I mean, it's made it very clear, surely, that there has to be investment in this squad, in defenders who can defend. I think as well we have to talk about Unai Emery's role in this. I absolutely accept it's his first few months at the club. I accept that he doesn't have personnel who are good enough. I know we've been beset by injuries, but I didn't see any kind of structure or organization to that team. And I'm not sure I've seen an awful lot of it this season. It was Tim, I think, from 7 a.m. kickoff who said, you know, something about the style of play that Emery has. Maybe I should find that tweet here. Just bear with me one second.
No worries. I mean, I do think the point about injuries is one that hasn't been stated too loudly, but I do think it's important. I mean, you know, we talk about Sokratis and Mustafi being our first choice central defensive pairing, but actually, when he was fit, Rob Holding was in there ahead of those guys. And Hector Bellerin is a massively important player.
I think, both of those players are a big miss.
And, you know, that certainly, I think, is a contributing factor. However, you would also have to say it's not like we've been defensively watertight when they have been available.
Mm. So Tim from 7 a.m. kickoff said, the players we have are bad, but what's also striking to me is a lack of organisation on the pitch. We still don't seem to know where anyone is supposed to be. Huge gaps appear all over the place. Our defensive line is ragged and there's little help for the defence. And, you know, it got me thinking, really, you know, he has been very tactically flexible since he took over. You know, we play a back three one time, we'll switch to a back four in the middle of a game, we'll do this, that and the other, but I'm not sure he's working off a baseline or a one set formation as a platform, which is the natural way to set this team up. And did you see the moment in the Brighton game when Alex Iwobi came on at halftime and he asked Granit Xhaka, what formation are we playing?
Yeah.
It's like,
I did see that.
How is that? How is he asking that, having just come on at halftime? Like, what's, you know, we talk about this guy as having incredible attention to detail. That seems to be a little bit of a detail he forgot to tell the player who maybe wasn't even watching in the first half. Who knows? It's just, I think it's a really damaging defeat, you know, for confidence, for morale. It has really hammered home how bad we are defensively. And while we've been looking for improvements under Unai Emery, and I think there have been some in terms of our character, in terms of our resilience, in terms of our work rate, mm-hmm. I'm not sure we've got the legs or the stamina or the fitness for those to maintain that improvement over the course of the season. Ultimately, the quality of the players that we have will dictate how good we can be. And yesterday, Liverpool were good. I don't think we can take that away from them. They were good, but we made them better because we played like assholes. And I think it's, when I compare it to where we were after the Tottenham game, mm-hmm. which was a great performance and a great win, we didn't kick on from that.
No, it feels like a turning point for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, but I mean, I just want to say as well that, you know, it could easily turn back the other way.
Yes.
Two or three wins and we could all be feeling a lot better about things and a couple of results go our way ahead of us and, you know, we could be right back in the mix there. So I'm not sort of writing everything off, but I wonder, is it the kind of defeat where Emery can go to Raul and Sven and Raul and Sven can then go to Stan and Josh and say, look, unless we do something about the players that we have, unless we invest properly in defenders, we are not going to achieve what you want us to achieve this season, which is the Champions League, whether it's via the Europa League or via the top four. You know, a few weeks ago, I felt quite confident that we could stay in the fight for the top four. Now, I feel almost the opposite. And I realize that's, you know, the ups and downs of football and how your mood or your opinion can shift based on a few performances. But that's where I am with it right now. And I think unless we do something in January, I can't see how things are going to get much better.
No, I mean, it does feel a little bit like the league is slightly separating. You know, the top three, I think, will be the top three. And I feel like it's almost between us, Chelsea, and maybe United if they revive sufficiently for fourth place. Chelsea, as we speak, lead at Crystal Palace. So would open up a little bit of a lead over us in terms of the table. But I think the reason this defeat is so damaging and painful and the reason that fans have reacted to it so strongly is that I think it reopens some old wounds. I think when Arsene Wenger left, I think a lot of us kind of thought that this kind of result was maybe consigned to the past with him. And evidently that's not the case. And I think that realisation has been a real disappointment and a reality check, I guess, of where we are and the fact that, you know, I don't think Emery has come in and transformed us overnight. You know, we're clearly still very early on in that process. And I do think that that is, I think that that is acceptable. Like, I do think that it will require a degree of patience and that, you know, I know it's been bandied around a lot, this idea that, well, Jurgen Klopp finished eighth in his first season. But
he only came in January, didn't he? He only came in that January.
He came into a mess, of course, with under Brendan Rodgers. But I do think there is something to be said for that, that, you know, we can't expect these problems to go away overnight. I mean, fundamentally, the majority of the personnel are the same, with the exception of, you know, Sokratis and Lichtsteiner. It's the same defence. So, you know, I'm not that surprised that we still have this in our locker. And I do think earlier in the season we were defending pretty poorly too. It's just that Liverpool have a much more efficient attack than the majority of the teams that we've played. So it will... They exploited our weaknesses far more. Yeah. And I think we've dried up a bit going forward. You know, there was a time where you thought, well, look, we are rubbish at the back. Emery recognises that. He's putting the emphasis on our attacking play. There are times when we have Aubameyang, Lacazette, Ozil, Iwobi, Ramsey, all potentially on the field at the same time. It doesn't feel like that anymore.
No.
It feels like we've lost Mkhitaryan to injury.
Mm.
We're only playing one of Lacazette or Aubameyang because we've lost Welbeck to injury. Ramsey and Ozil are on the fringes of this squad or seemingly not really part of the long-term plans. Iwobi's out of form. So we have lost that attacking threat that was used to counterbalance our defensive deficiencies.
Yeah.
And now we're being exposed.
Yeah, look, you know, there are problems at all ends of the pitch, I guess. The attacking side of our game, like you say, is not a problem now, but we do have two big strikers who aren't getting chances. I mean, there were stats going around about Aubameyang yesterday and how many touches of the ball he had and all that kind of crap, but I'm not sure they're really relevant in a game like this or a performance like this. What the fuck is he supposed to do? You know, if he's not getting the ball in decent areas. I mean, there was that moment, wasn't there, where he put it over the bar from, I don't know, a yard out?
Saved by the flag.
Saved by the flag in that regard. But, look... I can't look beyond our defenders as a significant part of our problems because it's impossible to attack properly and efficiently if you don't feel like you have at least some kind of defensive platform behind you. It's inhibiting because everybody knows we've got a fucking... clown at centre half. We've got a guy who's too old. This too old, too slow, is off the pace, and who, frankly, I'm liking less and less every time I see him play. I know people talk about his mentality and his shithousery and all that, but I think those could be things that are just masking a footballer who is at the end of his career and shouldn't be playing for a club like Arsenal. Socrates gets away with it because, you know, he's new. He's a relatively new signing and we don't have the weight of performance after performance with him. You know, he was really bad yesterday. He was very good against Burnley. So, you know, there's an element of mitigation there for him. Kolasinac, great going forward, not particularly good defensively. Koscielny, coming back from injury, we don't know if he's ever going to be the same again. Monreal, injured, in and out of the team, looking his age. So there are big problems back there. And then, of course, we have these two other issues. The Ramsey issue, which I don't think is as serious as the other one, which I'm going to talk to you about now in a second. You know, there's I can understand maybe an unwillingness on Emery's part not to play Ramsey because, well, he wants to build the team around players who are going to be there. We get that. But you can't cut your nose off to spite your face. I don't think Ramsey was particularly good yesterday either, but then nobody was. And then we have our £350,000 a week elephant in the room who is out with a knee injury. Do you think it's a knee injury? I mean, we don't know. All we can do is speculate, but based on everything we've seen so far this season, it's impossible not to be cynical.
It would appear very coincidental that before games in which Mesut Ozil was unlikely to start, he sometimes is entirely absent from the squad. Mm. You know, that has happened on more than one occasion this season, be it a back problem or illness or now a knee problem.
Not just this season, but you know through his career at this club, it's happened.
Yeah. Yeah, and I...
It's more pronounced now, though, I would say.
It is more pronounced, and I also think that the difference is that I think we have a manager, or a coach, rather, who doesn't have the same degree of faith or trust in him that Arsene Wenger did. And, you know, Arsene Wenger spoke about, I think, once on record, saying, you know, sometimes we'd think about dropping Ozil. Maybe it was Steve Bould who said this, I remember now, but sometimes we think about dropping him and then in training... You know, he'd do something astonishing or show his technical skill, and by the end of the week, he's back in the side. And Emery, I don't think, feels that way about Ozil. All that much is clear. I think he doesn't trust him, particularly away from home. And it's a real problem. I mean, that said, I had people tweeting me on during the game saying, well, 3 or 4-1 down, saying, well, this is on Emery, you know, if he'd picked Ozil.
Oh, come on.
And I was like, if you watch Liverpool play at that intensity and you think that Mesut Ozil would have been useful to us, I think, in that game, I think you've been watching a very different player to the one I've been watching. I mean, I just think, I actually agree with Emery that in these big away games, he is actually a bit of a liability. And, you know, bring on the pitchforks. But that's what I think.
Where does that leave us with him then? This is a guy earning £350,000 a week, which, you know, if you think about someone like Torreira, who's probably on 70 or 80 grand a week, you get three players' wages from what we're getting from Mesut Ozil. It feels like Emery is really trying to push the club into making a decision.
That's what I think, yeah. I'm convinced that that's his intention. He's making it absolutely clear to the powers that be that, you know, that this isn't a sustainable situation. And, you know, that has already provoked a bit of a, not a divide among the fans, but certainly a big point of debate, because, you know, it comes down to, does the coach put his idea, his tactical philosophy, if you will, above and beyond all other things, or should he work with what is available to him?
Because
if you brought someone in fresh to this squad and said, well, look, this is the squad, these are the high earners, these are the players you've got, ideally, perhaps you would like someone to say, OK, well, I've got a plan that involves Mesut Ozil, and potentially involves Aaron Ramsey too. I would argue that Emery has tried to do that. And as easy as it is now to say, oh, he's discarding Ozil, he's ostracising him, I think it's easily forgotten that at the start of the season, in pre-season, he spoke about wanting to be a home for Mesut Ozil, to be a family to him, to include him in the team, that he did play him in the first few games. You know, he played him against Man City. He supported him publicly. He made him a captain of the team. He was heavily involved. And then, you know, it didn't work out. But I do think that he has tried. I really do. I think he's tried to make it work for Ozil. And as much as people can point to that Leicester game or that pass for Kolasinac, I don't think anyone can make a concerted case that he has performed across the season.
Or last season.
Yeah.
You know, since he got the contract, we haven't had anything close to what we thought we were paying for Mesut Ozil. You know, remember he missed a load of games towards the end of last season with the back injury going into the World Cup. And look, I know the circumstances were weird then as well, because we never looked like we were going to finish higher or lower than sixth. So it was easy to do it. I think you're right. I think he has tried with Ozil. I don't think any manager coming into a new club would deny himself the quality and the talent that Mesut Ozil has on purpose or without good reason. And there's got to be some method to what appears to be, for some people, madness by Unai Emery in this regard. I think people might have an easier time in accepting what's going on with Ozil. And I think we can say at this point it's verging on unhealthy slash toxic, because you cannot have a £350,000 a week player at your club who doesn't play, whether it's away from home, at home, wherever. You just can't sustain that kind of lunacy, because that's all it is. But I think,
well, quickly say as well, if it is injury, then that's as big a problem. You know, you can't pay someone those wages if they're only going to be fit for a third of the game.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't think it's, maybe I'm wrong, but and if he does have any injury, I take it back and everything else. But based on everything else that's gone on this season, you can't be cynical. But what I'm saying is that people might find it easier to deal with the absence of Ozil for tactical reasons, as Emery keeps saying, if we knew what his tactics were.
That's a really, really good point. And I think that is the crux of it, that if people saw a clear ideology on the field, something they could really hang their hat on and say... I remember Jurgen Klopp's first game for Liverpool. I think it was against Spurs at White Hart Lane. And I remember watching the first 20 minutes of that game and thinking, wow. And this was a Klopp team that was a bit of a mess, really. I mean, he inherited a real mess from Rodgers, and I think the back four was Klein, Skirtle, Sacco, and Moreno, with Mignolet behind them. You know, this was not a great team. But I remember watching that first match, and immediately I saw, oh, they're doing the Klopp thing. They're doing the Klopp thing. Like, they're chasing, they're breaking at speed, they're doing turnovers high up the field. You know, Adam Lallana was suddenly this pressing engine that he'd never been. And I remember thinking, OK, straight away, it's, you know, it's in evidence what Klopp wants to do with this team. And over the 3 years that followed, he has managed to do that incredibly successfully. With Emery, I accept it is harder to see the direction that he's going, that is so the antithesis of what Ozil can provide. You know, if we played with Aaron Ramsey regularly as the starting number 10, and he was this frenetic ball of energy, closing down defenders, dropping back in to help out the midfield, and that was what we had decided to do, then I think people go, OK, well, he's gone for that over Ozil.
Mm.
I can see the logic there. But that isn't really what we get or what we do. It's not coherent.
Yeah.
And I suppose my glass half full, as far as the manager goes, interpretation of it is maybe he just hasn't got the players to implement what it is he wants to implement. Like, maybe what he's got is so far from removed from his ideal that we can't see it yet.
That would be a good explanation, for sure. I do wonder what it is that he needs to do what it is that he wants to do, though, because there are
it's talented Ever Banega, players. Apparently.
Ever Banega, yeah. I mean, he's a good player. He is a good player. But I do question why we would sign another 30-year-old. The only way I could see something like that happen is if we get rid of Ramsey and Ozil in the January window. Maybe that's something we can discuss in the second part of the show. Mm. We've got might have some questions for that. Anything else that you just want to make a point on before we finish on part one?
I don't think so. I think we've sort of had a go at it, haven't we? Let's see what the questions bring.
Yeah, we'll do that. Okay, we will take a break. We'll be right back after this. That was like Mustafi defending segue into part two. Fuck me.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arseblog, and also on the Arseblog Facebook page, facebook.com/thearseblog. James, I'm going to start. This comes from Michael, who's at Euler56 on Twitter. We have no money for transfer fees and wages. Stan ain't going to put his hand into his pockets. With this in mind, what are we going to do about our defence in January?
Hey, I don't know. But listen, we talked about injuries. We talked about Bellerin and Holding. I think we were slightly remiss to not mention Nacho Monreal. I mean, I would argue three of our starting defenders weren't available yesterday. However, two of those are fullbacks and one of them is out for the rest of the season. We desperately, desperately need at least one centre-half.
Mm.
It really is pressing. I mean, we've kind of soldiered along with Mustafi. It's not worked out. I think Koscielny looks kind of what he is, which is a player towards the end of his career who's returning from a massive injury, who can't be relied upon to play two games a week. We really, really need a centre-half. And we haven't got the money to go out and buy, you know, someone who's already established at the top level, someone who's 50 million plus, I sincerely doubt. So I think we are reliant upon our scouting system and our network of contacts to turn somebody up, you know, a Lucas Torreira, someone like that, who we're not necessarily anticipating. But I cannot possibly see how anyone, any of the decision makers at the club, and I include the Cronkies in this, can look at what they saw at Anfield and think, oh, we'll be all right until the end of the season. If they are serious about pushing for the Champions League this year, then they have to sign a centre-half.
It's like that, you know, that This Is Fine image where the guy's sitting in the burning room. It's like that. It's a football version of that. I mean, on just to continue, Ryan, who's at Ryan MK1V, or is that Ryan Mark 4? Who knows? There's probably three other Ryans out there doing bad Ryan things. Who knows? But he says, if Gary Cahill is the answer, then what on earth is the question?
That would be a really underwhelming signing, wouldn't it? I think I'd go further than that, actually, and say it'd be disappointing. I mean, Gary Cahill has not been great for Chelsea for about 2 years now. If I speak to, you know, people I know as Chelsea fans, he's not in the team there. He's essentially surplus to requirements. And it's just not remotely inspiring. I don't look at him and think that he would be significantly better than Socrates. He probably would be better than Mustafi, to be honest with you.
Yeah, probably.
But I'm not.
It's a low bar.
Sure. Yeah, it's a low bar, and I'm not sure that he would be good enough for us to kind of play catch-up and close the gap on the teams above us. I mean, that's what it comes down to, isn't it? Is where, you know, Cronky won't put his hand in his pocket, but there's a big financial interest in returning to the Champions League. You know, that's important for the club's balance. It's important for the club's status. You know, if he thinks that that could be the difference, maybe he will. Maybe he will. I think it is at the point where it's absolutely necessary. And the only thing that makes me think we might see a stopgap type signing like a Cahill is if they absolutely know there's a guy we want to get in the summer, he's going to have a massive impact, be a huge transformative signing, but we can't get him until the summer. I do think if that's the case, you have to sort of go, all right, fair enough, but we're probably not going to make the top four this year.
Yeah. If that's the long game, I think you can live with that because, well, we saw Liverpool, didn't we? Remember everyone last year, they were trying to sign Virgil van Dijk, weren't they?
In the summer.
And it didn't happen. When did they sign him? Did they get him in the January?
Early January. I think they announced it in December and he moved at the start of January.
Okay, so, I mean, Klopp knew he needed a defender, but he knew exactly the defender that he wanted and didn't buy anyone just for the sake of buying anyone. But if that is the plan, I mean, I'd say people could live with it if the plan is public. Everyone knew that Liverpool wanted to buy Virgil van Dijk. It's very difficult to sell people on the idea of a guy who's played 21 minutes in the Premier League this season if you don't have any idea what the plan is. And I realise the club doesn't have to make it public and probably shouldn't make it public, but it doesn't change how people feel about these things. So.
But Liverpool did behave smartly in that respect. You know, it was their interest in Van Dijk was very public, and I guess I can imagine as a Liverpool fan they were probably very disappointed when they didn't get him on deadline day in the summer, but there was a kind of assumption that he would eventually move to Liverpool, that deal would eventually happen. Similarly, you know, they announced the Keita deal a year in advance, and that probably took the pressure off them from supporters as regards their transfer activity in that summer. You know, if Arsenal do identify the right person, it wouldn't be the worst thing if they said, OK, look, we've signed Gary Cahill for 6 months, but X is arriving in the summer. You know, I do think it might take something like that for this not to feel like a hash job, really. And I think that there is something to be said for waiting for the right guy, because look at our squad. It feels like it's in danger of filling up with stopgaps. You know, someone like a Socrates who is okay, but we've essentially committed to them financially. Mkhitaryan's another example. But, you know, they're not really the level that we necessarily need to be in 2 or 3 years' time. So I hope they can do something in January, something significant for the defence. But if they can't, I suppose we have to accept that as difficult as it is. I suppose I'd rather that than another 15 million on another crap defender.
Yeah, I guess. But you get to the point where you wonder if we have to speculate to accumulate, to break ourselves out of this Europa League cycle. Because the more we become established as a Europa League club, the more difficult it's going to be to get out of it. You know, that's the danger for me as well. And, you know, you certainly... Let's remember that the who is he now? The managing director, Vinay, said that Arsenal being out of the Champions League is costing us tens of millions of pounds every season. Mm-hmm. That's something you can live with maybe for a couple of seasons, but not for 3 or 4, certainly not for 5 or 6. Because the longer it goes on, the more difficult it becomes to re-establish yourself as the kind of club that top players want to join. And I'm not sure at the moment that we're the club that top players want to join. Of course we're not. Why would you? I mean, people talking yesterday, you know, before the game, well, maybe we should just give Aaron Ramsey a new contract, get rid of Ozil, give Ramsey. But why would Ramsey want to stay at this point? If you're Aaron Ramsey and you're looking at what's going on and you're looking at the defensive calamities, and I'm not saying he doesn't play a part in everything that's going on. He is one player at the club. But if you're looking around, you're 27 years of age and you're looking at a team that is probably going to be playing Europa League football next year, and you've got a chance to join one of the big clubs in another league. You know, he's been linked with PSG, he's been linked with Bayern Munich, he's been linked with Juventus. That's the level of club that he's got options of when his contract expires. So why would he stay? You know, that's another damaging thing as well. However it's all gone down, it still reflects poorly on us. So, you know, I realise it's difficult. I realise that funds are limited. Maybe we have to do something to generate funds. And I'll just take the next question and you can ask the one after that. This one comes from Arshavin's Horse, who's at Talking Arse, whose avatar is actually an arse with a face on it. He says, how much of a rebuild do you think we need? Which player should we consider letting go in order to fund it? And do you think the fans have the patience and the unity for the club to pull it off?
Well, there's two obvious candidates, aren't there, in terms of, you know, who the club should consider letting go. I think, you know, Aaron Ramsey is an obvious one because his contract will be up in 6 months' time. If someone's prepared to put a bit of money on the table, it is tempting to take it. I have to say, you know, I saw a piece linking in with like a £10 million move somewhere. And I did wonder, how much is £10 million really worth to us? You know, is that, would we do something more useful with that £10 million than keep Aaron Ramsey for 6 months? I'm genuinely not sure about that. What do you think about something like that?
I don't know what we could do with £10 million. But I also don't know what we're going to get from Aaron Ramsey in the so-called system that Unai Emery wants to play. And I do think there's an issue that whether we like it or not, and Ramsey, I think, is a real professional who will always give you 100% on the pitch. But when you get to the last few months of your contract and you know an injury could have a really significant impact on your future, I do wonder about, subconsciously even, what you get from that player.
Well, you know, come January the 1st, if he wants to move abroad, he can sign a pre-contract.
Yes, he can. Yeah.
Someone else's player, you know, within a few months' time, and any injury would jeopardise a massive signing on fee, a massive deal and the move that he wants. So I think that's a really good point. And we've seen that historically, that in the players in the last 6 months of their contract have figured less and less. And the other one, of course, is Mesut Ozil. And I think that... you know, as much as I admire Ozil's talent as a player, I do think we are at the point where if the manager doesn't trust him, it would be better to let him go.
Yeah.
How you do that is difficult because of his huge salary. I have to say, if I was a big club, like if I was a Man City or a Barcelona, I would be sorely tempted by Mesut Ozil simply because I do sort of wonder to what extent his malaise is kind of due to the fact that he's not quite at the top of football. I do wonder, if you look at his career, his early 20s, he was at Real Madrid, between like 21 and 26 or whatever it was. He was at Real Madrid competing for La Liga, competing for the Champions League. He won the World Cup at 26. And now he finds himself at a Europa League team, you know, bouncing between fifth and sixth in the Premier League. And we wonder why he's a bit demotivated. I do wonder if, to an extent, you know, he had the peak of his career in the first part of his 20s and is now in some sort of bizarre kind of gilded cage. And that if you were to take him to say, right, you're playing at the Nou Camp every week or you're playing for Guardiola every week, you might actually unlock something in him that we don't particularly seem capable of unlocking right now.
Yeah.
To me, persuading someone else to take that gamble is another.
Of course. To me, if the relationship between Ozil and Emery is as bad as it looks from the outside, and if the coach can't play his star player, the £350,000 a week man, in an away game, not just at Liverpool, but at Southampton or at Bournemouth, then I think there's something really, really wrong with that situation. And you have to make a decision about what's best for the club at this point. Leave aside your preference for the player, whether you think he's a genius, whether you think he's a lazy arsehole, whatever you think, and those opinions are out there, you have to be realistic about what's best for Arsenal Football Club. Does it look to you as if it's going to work out with Mesut Ozil and Unai Emery?
No.
No, to me neither. So you've got two options. One is that you get rid of Unai Emery, or you get rid of Mesut Ozil. And I think from the club's point of view, getting rid of Ozil gives you £350,000 a week to play around with in your wage bill. It takes a huge burden off your wage bill. You can spread the money around. You could use it perhaps to fund transfers, because if you're talking £350,000 a week is what? About how much? Hang on. Where's my calculator here? I'm not good at maths, but...
Well, it's, if you times it by 52, it's...
It's £18 million a year.
A year? Yeah.
And let's spread that out over, let's say, another 2 years. So you're talking about 40-odd million pounds. 50 million pounds, maybe. You know, that's a not insignificant amount of money that could buy you some players. I think where we really need to go in terms of how we work the market are more Torreiras and Guendouzis. Those are the signings I think that we need to make. They're more realistic. They're more within our budget. The players have got scope for improvement. They don't cost as much as big stars. It might take a little while to get them to where we want to get them, but they could also then become valuable assets which we can sell and continue the cycle of reinvestment in the club the way that Liverpool have done with Coutinho and with Suarez. And actually somebody made that point to me here, Adnan Khan, who says, I keep hearing that Emery's situation at Arsenal is analogous to when Klopp started at Liverpool. Given how few bankable assets we have to generate funds for players Unai wants, is this really true? We don't have a Coutinho to sell for 150 million. But, and that's true, that's absolutely true, we don't. You know, we had a Ramsey we could have sold for maybe 40 million in the summer. We had a Welbeck we could have sold for 20-odd million in the summer. We didn't. We've left that money behind. But where I do think we can free up some funds and commitment to funds is by moving on Mesut Ozil. Like you say, it's easier said than done. I think the potential destinations for him are few and far between. Ozil apparently wants to stay. Fine. But if we're talking about what's best for Arsenal, then I think a parting of the ways at this point is the only real option, unless somehow Emery and Ozil can sit down and work out some kind of treaty between them to get more from the player. But I really don't think that's realistic. So what do we do? No. Just hang on to a guy and pay him £350,000 a week for the rest of his contract and barely play him? That's stupid. So bite the bullet. People won't like it, But if we can invest in more Torreiras, maybe they can learn to live with it.
Maybe. And call me old-fashioned, but if the choice comes down to Ozil or the manager, my instinct is to back the manager in these situations. And I, you know, before the last few years of Arsene Wenger's career when with Arsenal, where, you know, I was kind of the mind that we needed to change, I took a lot of stick for backing Wenger, you know, over in situations over Thierry Henry, in situations over Patrick Vieira, Robin van Persie. You know, ultimately, I think most fans did said, well, look, you know, this guy has got the bigger interests of the club at heart. We believed in that, and we ultimately went with him over the individual players. And I do think that you have to do that. You have to support the manager. You have to give them authority. And I think Mesut Ozil, it seems to me, is presenting some kind of challenge to Emery's authority. And I don't think it's an imagined challenge. I don't believe the stories that he's so haunted by what happened with Neymar that he kind of has envisaged Ozil or something that he's not. I think you can see the problems between Emery and Ozil. You can see why he doesn't fit the model. So, I say back the manager and let him, give him the chance to do what he's going to do. Because ultimately, Ozil is the age that he is. He's costing us what he's costing us. I think if there's a way to sever that tie and create, put some money back into the club that's currently going out for a player who's barely playing, I think you have to take that route.
Mm. Yeah, I think so.
But, you know, yeah.
It's a big test for these people who are now tasked with running the football club from a footballing perspective. Raul and Sven and, you know, Vinay and all these guys. It's tough. But maybe you have to make a really difficult, unpopular decision for the benefit of the football club in the long term. Because
And maybe you have to take one step back to go forward, genuinely. Like, maybe you have to say, we're selling Aaron Ramsey, we're selling Mesut Ozil, we can't get the players in January to replace them. You know, we're not going to necessarily kick on in the way that we hope in the second half of the season. But come the summer, we do actually have money to spend. We have identified the right targets. We have got the right people in place. Like, I understand everyone's impatient. I understand everyone wants us to be back in the Champions League overnight. But I do think the scale of the job that Unai Emery inherited is sometimes overlooked. And I think that our unbeaten run papered over a lot of cracks and maybe set up expectations that, you know, the problems at the club don't necessarily allow for.
Yeah, and I think as well it's worth pointing out that there has been the investments that we've made in players over the last number of years have been poor. I don't think there's necessarily been a huge lack of investment. People point to a lack of investment. I don't think that's necessarily the case based on what we've spent. But I think what we spent on... sorry. But I think what we spent on are some really poor players. We've wasted money. Think about the Lucas Paris.
We talk about how expensive Ozil is. Think about how expensive Mustafi is. Think about the fee that we've paid for him.
Absolutely.
And what his wages presumably are to reflect the size of that fee. I mean, he's cost us tens and tens of millions of pounds. That's a poor investment. I would argue, as much as I love Aubameyang and Lacazette, that given our resources, allocating 60 million quid each or whatever it was to two centre forwards who, you know, when we don't necessarily play that way, wasn't the smartest use of that money.
No. I don't think Henrik Mkhitaryan was a good investment in terms of what we've had to pay him in terms of wages. He's costing us 200 grand a week.
Oh, I mean, and if we could have sold Alexis and Ozil the summer before their contracts expired and banked 100 million quid and done something with that, I genuinely think that would have been better.
Sure. And look, you know, let's remember that Alexis was on something like 130 grand a week when he left Arsenal. And we all laugh at the big wage that he got at Manchester United and the fact they're not getting any value for that. And that's fine. I get that. But we paid a guy who's not as good nearly twice as much. That's not smart. It's not smart. Lucas Perez was not a smart deal. You know, think about what we spent on him. £18 million we spent on Lucas Perez. I remember talking to you on this podcast because, you know, you knew someone who was involved in the scouting side of things. Mm. And Arsenal were told that Lucas Perez was not up to what Arsenal needed. He wasn't a good investment at that price. We went ahead. We did it. We then loaned him out after a season in which he played okay. You know, he did all right, Lucas Perez, but he played barely anything in the last part of the season because Wenger obviously looked at him and said, well, this guy isn't good enough for what I think an Arsenal player should be, bearing in mind, you know, that the players he was picking maybe weren't that much better in some cases. But then we loaned him to Deportivo. Maybe we got £1 million or something as a loan fee. And yeah, we sold him to West Ham for what? £3 million? £3.5 million?
About £3 million.
Yeah. So we've taken a £15 million plus wages fucking hit on a player like Lucas Perez. You know, so I think Emery is dealing with chronically bad spending of money by Arsenal, not just last season or the season before, but over the last number of years. It hasn't been strategic in any way. It was reactive, and we always said that, didn't we, about the money, the way we spent or the way we dealt in the transfer market. There never appeared to be a cohesive plan as to what way we were trying to put our squad together. Instead, we would just, you know, like Mustafi was a fucking end of August signing, wasn't he? Where we knew we had to get a defender all summer, and we got nailed to the wall with £35 million for that guy. £35 million.
I know. It was the same time as the Perez deal. I think we did them within a few days of each other. Earlier that summer, we signed Xhaka, who, depending on your assessment of the player, it was also, you know,
I think we've got better value for our money from Xhaka because he's somebody who plays regularly, who can contribute positively to the team despite some of the stupidity and some of the mistakes that he makes. You know, I would, if you asked me to choose between the £35 million we spent on Xhaka and the £35 million we spent on Mustafi, you know, there's only one that comes out well. But you could still say he's overpriced.
I would add as well, I've seen people saying, you know, people say Emery inherited a dodgy defence, but, you know, three or four of the players in yesterday's defence were his signings. And I do think that it's not necessarily right to call them Emery's signings. I don't think Unai Emery signed Bernd Leno. I don't think he signed Socrates.
No.
I don't think he signed Lichtsteiner. I don't think he was even appointed when the Lichtsteiner deal was essentially done. So I would not call those players Emery's signings. I think you have to try and separate. I know we're used to seeing a team all signed by the manager, but I don't think that's what we've got right now.
Yeah, I mean, you might well say that the Torreira and Guendouzi signings were the most Emery signings, that he had the most input or influence over, because he knew Guendouzi from France. Mm-hmm. And Torreira, I think there was some story going around that, you know, he was part of the process of getting the Torreira deal done, which is, you know, brilliant. Fine. And they're probably the two signings that have worked out best, pound for pound.
And the two signings he seems to trust the most, certainly.
Mm.
But I do think that hopefully the process is more collaborative. I completely understand why it wasn't last summer. Arsenal were in a bind. They had a manager who they didn't know if he was staying or going until the very last few weeks of the season. They then had to press on ahead. They had a World Cup to contend with. They had to get business done. They had to appoint a new coach. You know, Sven had to press on and make inquiries, do deals, you know, get things moving. But now Unai's been in the club with an office, you know, round down the corridor from Sven, from Raul, for several months now. When we go for people in this January transfer window, I have to believe there'll be a more unified approach and that there'll be players who specifically meet Emery's requirements. I don't think you can look at the signings we made in the summer. And you know, I know for the most part they've done okay, the signings in the summer, but I don't think you can look at them and call them Emery's signings. I think that's unfair.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd agree.
What about, well, I suppose on that note, this is quite a straightforward question really, but Dean Van Nguyen, who's at Dean Van Nguyen on Twitter, says, is Socrates good enough for Arsenal? Does he avoid the heavier criticism by just being an okay defender in a bad bunch?
Maybe.
Hard time to judge, isn't it, after his worst performance in an Arsenal shirt yesterday?
Yeah. You know, I have to say, last week after the Burnley game, I was thinking, yeah, I quite like this guy, and I think he's done pretty well since he came in, and then he had a horror show at Anfield. Which, of course, colours your opinion of a player. But I think, as I said earlier, we don't have the weight of 2.5 seasons of him playing like that. So is he good enough? I think he could be, but he needs a better partner.
I mean, look at Dejan Lovren and what a mess he was at Liverpool for so long.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the moment with Joe Gomez out, he's getting plenty of game time. And next to Van Dijk, he looks passable. So there is hope, I think, if the partnership is right and the balance is right and Mustafi isn't in it, then there is hope.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, what do you think?
I'm not convinced he's... I can't imagine a Premier League winning team with Sokratis in it. I'd go that far.
Okay, here's... Okay, I would agree with that, which just reminds me of a question here from Chippy's Curler. I like Emery, but can you help me make the Spanish Bruce Rioch fit the narrative? Like, I don't see Arsenal winning a title under Unai Emery. I think he's the kind of coach who could stabilise us. If we do win a title under Unai Emery, please feel free to remind me of this moment in episode 264 of the Arscast Extra, published on Sunday, December 30th. Play it back to me. It'll be like manna from heaven. I'd love to hear it again, and I hope I'm absolutely wrong. But I don't think Emery is a title-winning coach. I think he's a coach brought in to stabilise us, get us back into the top four, and at some point, in order to make real progress towards the title, we're going to have to find someone else. So I think Sokratis is that kind of a signing.
I think that's true. I think the problem is that we are making signings to stabilise us and to get us back into the top four at a time when other teams in the league, teams already in the top four, are improving nonetheless, you know. So look at Liverpool. I mean, they're raising the bar all the time. I know Man City are wobbling, but they are on another level, really, to most teams in this league. You know, we're sort of building a team for fourth at a time when the top three are breaking away from that. And that is a concern. But it is also all we can do with our financial constraints and without Champions League football to offer. I do think that is kind of all we can do. I don't think Emery... Do I imagine Unai Emery winning the Premier League? Not without a lot more money. Not without a lot more money. You know, if I think how good a coach I think Pochettino is, which is very good, and I don't really think he can win the Premier League, you know, in terms of competing with Man City and Liverpool, what they're spending. I just, you know, so I think Emery would hit the same buffers in that respect. But also, I'm not that worried about that. Like, I genuinely am not worried about that. My focus as an Arsenal fan now is to re-establish them as a Champions League team. That's what I want to see happen. That's the job at hand. And I agree with you that there's a second phase after that where we can push on. And but, you know, it's almost not worth thinking about that. We've got to deal with the issue in front of us, and that is returning to the Champions League. And I do think he's a good coach for that reason.
Yeah, okay. S, who's at Wood10 underscore, says, how many of our defenders do you realistically see being part of the squad next season?
Okay, I don't think Koscielny will be here next season.
Me neither.
Monreal. Is Monreal out of contract at the end of the season? Yeah. I mean, Emery spoke earlier in the season about wanting to extend it, but there's not been any news of that. So I would say maybe not him either. Okay. I would like to think Mustafi might move on.
I'll give him a hand if he needs it.
A shove. I think that might be it. Chambers, I think, will be sold as well.
Yeah. So that would leave us... Oh, I don't think Lichtsteiner will be with us next season either.
Oh, really? I think it's got a two-year deal, hasn't it?
I thought it was 1 year with an option.
Maybe it is.
And I think the option should be, you know, now can we get our money back? I know we didn't spend any, but please give us a refund.
Sure, sure. Mm. So that would leave us with sort of Kolasinac holding, hopefully, Sokratis,
Mavropanos.
Mavropanos, yeah, who I'd forgotten all about, but he's back in training. Bellerin, and if you want to include him, Maitland-Niles.
I'm not sure I do include Maitland-Niles as a defender. I know he is an option, but I don't really think he is a natural defender, and I think that's part of the problem. You know, let's think about the fact that throughout last season and this season, we've been playing a young central midfield player as a wing back or a left back or a right back or a right wing back. You know, people worry about his development, but how could it not be difficult for him? You know, I think we overlooked that a little bit. So, like you, I don't think Koscielny will be here. Monreal's a maybe, but probably not. Mustafi, I feel like Mustafi will never leave. He's like that thing on the end of your toe, James.
Sure.
Someone needs to cut it off. Sokratis, and maybe whoever we bring in, what about Kolasinac?
I think he will be there, actually. I've sort of done a U-turn on that. I think Emery likes him enough. I have to say, I know that there are reasons that we didn't buy a left-back in the summer, i.e. we couldn't really afford to go and get one on top of what we already had, but have you seen the guy playing at Everton, Luca Dean? I just sort of feel like that's a massive missed opportunity for Arsenal.
Yeah, I have seen him. I wasn't that impressed.
I think he's a very good player. But, you know, it's sort of one of those cases where it wasn't top of our agenda. We had priorities and they were central midfield and centre-half and goalkeeper. And we ticked that off and we left a lot undone. We potentially needed another centre-half. We didn't do it. We'd potentially need a left-back. We didn't do it. Potentially need a winger. We didn't do it. There is still a lot of work to do on this squad.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think we need to go... Again, we need to get that young player who's ready to make the step up at left bank.
Yeah.
But who it is, I don't know.
Well, no, it's hard to pick names. It's really hard to pick
actually,
names.
Well, actually, yeah, it is hard. And people often say, who should we get? Who are the players? You know, you want us to spend? You want us to go out and spend money on a centre-half? Who is there? Who's out there? I don't fucking know. It's not my job. It's not my job to know. I'm not paid millions of pounds a year to be the head of fucking recruitment and to scout people and send scouts everywhere. That's Sven's job.
Well,
but
what
I
about
didn't
this?
Know. Go on.
Well, this is a question from Anish Chandoke. Anish says, outside of the top six, there are some very good players which Arsenal don't find fashionable to sign. Remember, Virgil van Dijk was signed from Southampton. The last player Arsenal signed from a non-top six team was Arteta. And he suggests players like Wan-Bissaka, Luka Dean, Chilwell, Maguire, Tarkowski, Pereira could all make us better. What do you think about that? Are there other players in the lower reach of the Premier League who could...
Of course there are. We've just spent a whole podcast talking about how shit our defenders are. So, you know, the idea that there aren't players out there who can improve us and who would be better than the ones we have is absolutely ludicrous. Which players exactly they are, I don't know. Depends on their availability, depends on whether we want them or not, you know. But unquestionably, there are players probably at championship level who could make a step up and be better than some of the players that we have in the squad, even if just to flesh out the squad. You know, let's not forget Rob Holding came from Bolton for £2.5 million and was probably our best central defender this season until he got injured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so...
Liverpool, top of the Premier League. I mean, they mentioned Van Dijk, but Sadio Mane came from Southampton. Shaqiri was relegated from the Premier League last season and is currently in their first 11. You know, I do think there probably are players out there who can make the step. It's just difficult to identify who would and who wouldn't be able to do it. It's a bit of a guessing game, but that's what scouts do. That's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool signed your man Robertson, didn't they, from...
Oh, yeah.
From Hull. You
from
know.
Hull, yeah.
So, you know, the players are out there. The idea that you can only get good players from top clubs is, well, I mean, it's ludicrous. We got Torreira from Southampton. You know, we brought in Guendouzi, who I think is a player with great potential, still with some flaws. But we got him from League Two in France. So you can't just close your mind to the idea that because a player currently is playing for a club you consider inferior to Arsenal, that guy couldn't make Arsenal better. You know, he bought bloody fucking Ian Wright from Crystal Palace.
Crystal Palace, yeah.
You know, David Seaman came from QPR. You know, of course those players are out there. It's about identifying them and making those deals happen. So, again, not our job. Go do it, Sven and Raul and whoever the fuck else.
Absolutely. I mean, actually, sorry to jump the queue again. Chris Cloten, who's at Triple C 1988, says, could playing some of the younger players in defence, like Mavropanos when he is back, or Medley, be worth it considering how absolutely shite the other options are? Young players cost you points, but our experienced ones are doing that too.
It's a good point. It's a good point. I think probably Mavropanos is the closest to making the breakthrough. But, I mean, I was looking at, you know, Lichtsteiner playing at right back, and I'm wondering, do we not have a right back in our academy who could understudy Hector Bellerin better? Mm. You know, because the contrast in style between Lichtsteiner and Bellerin is so vast, they're just completely different kinds of players. And I understand the need to bring in some experience into a dressing room and all that kind of stuff. But given how fundamental fullbacks are to the way that Emery wants to play, that's maybe the one thing that we can take away from the games we've played and from the system that he has tried to implement. It's getting the fullbacks into dangerous positions. So why did we go out and get a fullback who, if he can get into those dangerous positions, just can't deliver the ball? He's atrocious. You know? So I'm wondering, is there not a young fullback? What about the guy, Osei Tutu?
He's a right back.
He's a right back. You know, Carl Jenkinson. I mean, look, at the one thing you'd say about Jenkinson, he's got an engine and he's got good delivery from the right-hand side.
Yeah.
Defensively, can he be any worse than Lichtsteiner at this point? Maybe. But he might give you a bit more going forward than we're getting from that guy. So the thing about young defenders is it's a really big step up, and every mistake is a sort of dagger in the heart, you know? And I think managers, while they're much more prepared to put in a young forward or a young midfielder because there's a bit more protection around them, with young defenders, it's you've got to be really sure that they've got the quality and also the temperament to cope with things when they go wrong, because they will go wrong when you're a young defender. But I think Mavropanos is possibly the one who could get close to the first team. We bought him a year ago. He's been at the club a year now, basically. Clearly somebody that Sven identified as a talent capable of playing for Arsenal Football Club. And maybe it is a case that when he gets match fit and gets close to first team action, he could be an asset to us. But, you know, if you look beyond that, if you look at Zach Medley, I think he's still quite young. I think it's been notable down the years. You know, we've had these young defenders at youth level. If you think about Pleguezuelo, Ignacy Mikel, you know, guys who've been at the top of the youth system, if you like.
Yeah.
But not good enough to make the step up. So we need to really be aware of how big the gulf is between under 23 football and senior football. Like look at the Checker Trade Trophy. You know, that was our under 21s playing against whoever it was. We got beaten by Portsmouth. Got well and truly beaten by Portsmouth. And I think they let in 6 in one game, you know? And that's just from playing against a League One side or, you know, Championship side. So there's a lot for those young players to do to make the step up. I think the answer is the transfer market, really.
How optimistic are you about the transfer window? Do you think, how much do you think Arsenal should do, and how much do you think they will do?
They should sign at least one central defender.
Yeah,
they should. If they don't, it's a dereliction of duty, basically. They could do with signing an attacking player as well, unless they're prepared to give someone like Saka a go, a real go. He was on the bench yesterday at Liverpool, so...
Yeah, ahead of Nketiah.
Yeah, so maybe that might be an option if funds are limited. But if they don't sign at least one central defender, I think the people who are running this club are doing the manager and doing the fans a real disservice. And they're letting down the other players in the team as well. You know, it's obvious. Look at what happened yesterday. It's obvious we need somebody there who can add something to the first team. Not just somebody who can come in and be part of the squad. Somebody who can add something to the first team. And that's what I think they should do. I don't care how they do it. I don't care really at this point who they sell to make it happen, to raise funds. Because unless we do something about it, I think it's just going to be, we're going to get another one of these games next time we play one of the big teams. And it's going to be unpleasant again. And we're going to sit here and go, why the fuck aren't they doing anything? So that's what I think. I can't see a lot of action. But if I don't see a central defender come in, I think it'd be really poor reflection on the owners and also the people who can make those deals happen.
I think they have to do it. I think they will do it. I don't think they've got much choice in the matter. I really, really don't. I think a central defender will come in. And I think there's every chance Aaron Ramsey will go because they might see it as a chance to reclaim some money. And if he does, maybe they will bring in a central midfielder as a replacement. Even though I sort of think we require a winger maybe more, you know, than we do a central midfielder. I just feel that all these links to Benega make me think, is Emery very keen on this idea of a midfield three, and is that a component he wants in there?
Right. Well, look, you know, I don't know what more we can say about about this and about the situation and about the game. I think we've done it to death. And if you're still with us and you haven't slumped in the corner with a bottle of gin, thank you very much indeed. We appreciate it. I'm going downstairs to get a bottle of gin right now. It's only 1:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Sod it. Let's get it on. Anyway, look, I think we should leave it there and just take this opportunity to wish all of you a very happy, peaceful, prosperous and healthy new year. It's going to be next year before we talk, James.
Oh, wow. 2019. Imagine it. We'll be a whole different team, I'm sure.
The future is nearly upon us, folks.
Exactly. Let's embrace it. But no, thank you for listening all year.
Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Another year bites the dust.
Another year over and a new one just begun, as some fucker said anyway.
Someone once said.
Okay, listen, we'll leave it there. Thanks as ever. Do give us a rating or review on iTunes if you like, but do have a very happy new year. We'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.